Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast presented by WinBet. Check out winbet.com for all your sports wagering needs. Nick Whalen joined by James Anderson. James, the NBA draft took place a full week ago at this point. Some scheduling conflicts, a ton of things going on in baseball, in the NBA, in other sports, pushed this pod back a couple more days than we would normally do it. But I want to dig in and kind of recap the NBA draft, talk about some of the winners, the losers, some of the implications for this season and beyond. So let's get right into it. We will kind of use our NBA draft Q&A article that went up on the site on Wednesday as a rough guide, but we'll hit on pretty much all the major stories, all the players who could have an impact next season. But the number one question that I asked you in that article, James, and we both submitted our answers to this, which pick from the lottery was the most surprising to you? Was it Josh Giddey at number 6? Was it Zaire Williams to Memphis at 10? Was it Josh Primo out of nowhere to the Spurs at 12, or someone else who I didn't list, not among those three?
It was Josh Giddey at 6 to the Thunder, and I never bought the James Bouknight buzz there because, the Thunder, you never know what they're going to do before they do it. So the fact that people thought they were going to take a guy had me convinced that they weren't going to take him there. But I just, to me, Jonathan Kuminga was just such an obvious pick there, such an obvious fit, because, he's a project. He is still sort of learning the game a little bit, but I think he unquestionably had the highest ceiling of anyone who didn't go inside the top 5. And I think you could argue he had a higher ceiling than Scottie Barnes or Jalen Suggs. And so the fact that the Thunder passed on Jonathan Kuminga, the fact that they passed on Alperen Sengun, who was also a guy that I just thought was a kind of an obvious fit. Just given the fact, you want to hit a big score there, right? You're not trying to get a role player with that pick if you're the Thunder, because you have all this runway to kind of rebuild, and you're really just trying to find another star to pair with SGA. And I mean, even if they'd gone with Zaire Williams or someone like that, I would have been like, oh, well, they must see something there. But Josh Giddey, to me, it's really hard to sort of envision him being more than just kind of the fourth or fifth best player on a solid team. His jump shot needs just a ton of work. He's not that great of an athlete. I sort of see where, I'm kind of putting myself in Sam Presti's shoes and trying to see like what he might have seen in Giddey, and like I could maybe see him just having this idea of like, I want to build this team where everyone in the rotation is like a really smart player, a really good passer, has a lot of size, and like Giddey kind of fits into that. But I was kind of stunned that they didn't take someone who I thought had more upside.
I think everybody felt that way, and I didn't see a ton of harsh criticism of the pick because I think Sam Presti has earned the benefit of the doubt in some ways. I think OKC is such a blank slate outside of SGA that it's kind of hard to criticize their picks because they don't really have any expectations, at least for the next few years. But I'm 100% with you. Like I think the Zaire Williams point is well taken because at least there's some very, very obvious upside, right? And with Giddey, there is upside, but you know what, the ultimate upside is probably a really, really good secondary option or a great playmaker, but not the guy who's going to lead your franchise. And granted, you locked up SGA on Monday with an extension, so you do have one guy in place. But I think at number six, you want someone with at least a little more perceived upside. Like I guess I wouldn't be surprised if 5 years from now, if we do a podcast on a redraft of the 2021 NBA draft, and Josh Giddey is the fifth or sixth best player in the draft, and we say, yeah, that was probably the right pick. I won't be surprised at all, but I just don't think there's like superstar potential there. And it's not like everybody else with superstar potential was off the board. I'm fine with taking him over Book Knight, but I mean, I know there are some questions around Kuminga, but that just felt like the perfect type of pick for the situation that OKC is in right now. So I was not only shocked that they took Giddey, but even more surprised that they passed on Kuminga.
Yeah, and I forget where I heard someone say this, but I agree with it. Like it did sort of feel like a look how smart we are type of pick. Like yes. they sort of were like, we've discovered that Josh Giddey is going to be really good, and like we'll show you guys like how smart we are. And I don't see Josh Giddey failing. Like so, I mean, I also don't really see Jonathan Kuminga failing just because of his physical tools. But like, you know, I think Giddey's going to have a long career. And I think like what you said, he very well could end up being one of the six or seven best players from this draft. But like, if you're the Thunder, even if you take a guy like Kuminga or Sengun with that pick and it's a swing and a miss and you don't get the guy that you hoped you were getting, like it's not the end of the world. Like you didn't have one of those top five picks. So I would go big or go home there.
Right. It was not a bad pick. It was just a little bit confusing giving the timetable. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. I kind of like Zaire Williams at 10 to Memphis. I think there's a chance that it's a total zero and you know he's just not a contributor in 4 or 5 years. That's certainly on the table. But I think they took the right mindset, you know, trading up from 17 to 10. They could have taken Book Knight, but it feels like they've kind of hit on like a couple of Desmond Bane, D'Anthony Melton types, you know, in recent years where they probably felt like they didn't need to add another two guard who doesn't really do anything but score. It felt like they moved up to target Zaire Williams because I don't think like if he doesn't go 10, I don't see him coming off the board until maybe OKC's or I think the pick that actually became Houston's pick. At 16, you know, the Thunder drafted again at 18. I think he probably falls another 7 to 10 picks if he doesn't go 10 to Memphis.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Like the last thing Memphis needed was another role player guard or another role player like forward or whatever. Like they have all those guys. I mean, it's one of the deepest teams in the league. And whoever they were going to take there probably wasn't going to be a part of the rotation this year, at least not early on, just given all their depth. So it totally made sense to take a big swing there. And I mean, is that like Sam Presti earned the benefit of the doubt to some degree, but I mean, this Memphis front office has really earned the benefit of the doubt in terms of their draft record in recent years. So, you know, there'd been some buzz leading up to the draft that Williams was kind of climbing up boards and teams were sort of throwing out that season at Stanford due to all the circumstances involved there and sort of defaulting to their scouting reports on him from high school. And Just the fact that a smart team jumped on him there, that kind of has me sort of eager to sort of see where this goes with him.
It reminded me a lot of the Cam Reddish pick in 2019, where I think Cam Reddish probably put out more bad tape than Williams did. Like with Williams, it was, you know, you looked shaky-ish for like 15 games and then got hurt and, you know, that was kind of it. Whereas like Reddish had like 1.5 good games at Duke and was like objectively pretty bad for most of that season. And the Hawks still took him at 10 based largely on his pre-college pedigree. So it's almost the exact same situation. And, you know, it's not like Cam Reddish has developed into a superstar. You know, he had injuries pretty much keep him out for all of this past season, but he's looked relatively good. He looks like somebody who fits in the NBA. And I think that kind of paves the way for a pick like Zaire Williams at 10.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think Cam Reddish, what he showed in that Hawks-Bucks series, or at least some of the flashes he showed,
yeah.
Like he looks like he could be a real winning piece, a real two-way wing, like the most coveted position in the league. And so, I mean, I think if this kind of goes that same way, then I think they'll be really happy. And yeah. Reddish has a bit more bulk and a bit more strength at the same age than Williams does. But, you know, Williams, I mean, that type of length, you know, it's kind of like, you know, he's kind of, his measurables sort of remind me a little bit of Paul George. He needs to add some strength, but I mean, you could totally see how 3-4 years from now, he could be that third piece to go with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson.
If there's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire, it's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more are at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in 6 U.S. states, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding nationwide. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. All you have to do is download the WynnBET app right now. That's WynnBET, WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. So let's talk biggest steals of the draft. It's not often that you get a true steal in the top 5, but I know you and I and a lot of people, I think, agree that the Magic, specifically the Magic, landing Jalen Suggs at number 5, a guy who I think could have gone as high as probably 3. A lot of people thought he would go 4 to Toronto. That seemed like a natural fit. Obviously, Toronto opts to go with Scottie Barnes at 4, and we'll get to that in a second. But Jalen Suggs at 5 to Orlando, I think he just has a crazy high floor. I'm a huge Jalen Suggs guy. I think he's going to be really, really good. And, you know, all of a sudden, you pair that pick with Franz Wagner at number 8, and, you know, Orlando goes from, like, arguably the worst and bleakest roster in the league in terms of projecting out for the next 3 to 5 years to all of a sudden having like a fairly exciting young core, which is not something you could say about the Orlando Magic since, like, I don't even know, like the Dwight Howard days.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was just a really lucky scenario for them, because I hated the fit of Scottie Barnes there. I wouldn't have minded going Jonathan Kuminga there, but I mean, getting Suggs, getting that guy who doesn't really have any weaknesses. I mean, because really this whole roster, it's a lot of guys who are either, you know, really good on defense or really good on offense, but terrible on the other end of the floor. And Suggs is a guy that could be a big time defender, could guard both guard spots, and can be, you know, I don't know if he can be a total stud primary option on offense, but I think he could be a really, really good second option. And yeah, I mean, just having him fall into their lap. I mean, just part of why I loved it is I just thought ending up with Scotty Barnes there, you know, Scotty Barnes, like there's a lot of people who are a lot higher on him than I am, but he has just all these same weaknesses that their other guys have, guys like Markel Fultz and Jonathan Isaac, where you don't know if the shot's ever going to really be much of a weapon. So Suggs is just a really nice fit. And, you know, they've got Cole Anthony and RJ Hampton as well, and Fultz whenever he gets healthy. So they do kind of have a bit of a log jam at the ball handling spots, but I mean, they can always move off of one or two of those guys. So I thought that was a great landing spot for him. And like that sort of winning mentality and that those leadership traits that he brings is something I think this team really needed. I'm not that big on Franz Wagner. I don't think that would have been my pick there, but you know, he's gonna have a career at least.
I think when it comes to Cole Anthony and Markel Fultz, like I'm really glad that Orlando didn't pass on Jalen Suggs because they have those two guys. Like I like Cole Anthony. You and I both liked him coming into the draft. I thought he was fine as a rookie. I think it looks like he's gonna be a pretty good player. You know, ultimately maybe a really good sixth man. Maybe he's a lower end starter, who knows? But either way, he's gonna stick. And Fultz is making progress, but I mean, it's not like you have John Morant on this roster and you took another guard. Like I think it would have been a massive, massive mistake to not take Jalen Suggs because you like what Cole Anthony showed you in half of a season last year.
Yeah, and I think Suggs can play next to any of those guys.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he can guard. I think he's going to be able to guard most twos, and he can definitely guard most ones. So, and he does a lot of great stuff on the ball and off the ball. Like, I mean, he's going to crash the boards. He's going to make great cuts. He's going to make plays in transition. So, I think there's going to be some times where we see Cole Anthony and Suggs maybe starting together. Like, I know they've got Gary Harris, but, you know, we kind of know what Gary Harris is at this point, and he's not a big part of the Magic's future. So if Suggs develops pretty well, I think they need ball handling and they need shot creation. And if they have to start a couple guys who are technically point guards to get that into the lineup, I think that's fine.
Right. And that's where Suggs, I think, if you're talking fantasy or just projecting, you know, long term, I think that's where he has the biggest advantage. Like, not only is he the most talented of those three, but he can play both guard spots and he can defend both guard spots. Whereas, I mean, Cole Anthony kind of has to be on the ball. Not a great spot up shooter. Doesn't have the size necessarily to play off the ball. Fultz, maybe. I mean, but you don't really trust his spot up shooting at all unless that continues to improve. And he's coming off of a torn ACL that maybe sets him back. So I think the versatility with Suggs is another kind of underrated factor as far as where he fits. You also put down Alperen Şengün as one of your steals of the first round, a guy who made a late charge up James Anderson's personal big board, a very late charge. You messaged me like the morning of the draft. You're like, I'm in on Şengün. Do you consider it a fall down to 16 where the Thunder pick transferred to Houston and the Rockets land Şengün? Like, is that about where you expected, a little bit lower?
I thought he would go higher just because of how well he grades out analytically. But I guess I got the sense that teams just, you really had to love him to take him like in the mid lottery, just given that he's a big man. And, you know, we've talked about this before when talking about the draft, but like the rookie contracts that you give these guys when you take them in the top 10, if you're taking a center there, they really have to be a player for the contract to even make sense on the rookie scale deal, because you can get like a Robin Lopez or Kem Birch or whoever, like basically for nothing. So if you're taking a center that high, they really have to pan out to be worth the rookie scale contract. So I mean, it's not like I thought like the Thunder would take him at seven or, you know, I didn't expect the Pacers to take him or anything like that. So, I mean, like there's definitely spots on the board where I didn't think he would go, but I think if you're trying to find a all-star in this draft outside of the top five and Jonathan Kuminga, I think Sengun has the best chance to be an all-star. So like, I would have taken him. Like if I was OKC, I would have, if they didn't like Kuminga for whatever reason, I would have taken Sengun over Josh Giddey all day, just because I think he's got a much higher ceiling. And I would, if I was the Magic, I would have taken him over Franz Wagner for the same reason. I wasn't that surprised that he fell, but I do think that's going to end up looking like a big time steal a couple years from now.
I was surprised OKC traded out of that pick. That was a draft night deal. Like, that basically happened live as you're watching it. And, you know, it felt like such a natural fit. Like you said, it wouldn't have been that crazy if they took him at number six. And then for him to be available at 16 and for OKC to trade out of that pick, I thought was pretty baffling.
Yeah, my big question for him, like, especially like for fantasy, is, you know, how much is he gonna play early on? I think it's a great fit. I think it's a great fit overall, just because you know that the Rockets are going with a slow build here. They're definitely not going to be trying to make the playoffs anytime soon. And I think he fits pretty nicely. I think you could play him and Christian Wood together. I just hope that Daniel Tice doesn't take away too many minutes from him. But, if Sengun's playing like 24 minutes a game, 25, 26 minutes a game by, you know, like 2 months into the season, I think there's going to be some fantasy value there, just because of how efficient he can be on offense. Both, you know, I think he's going to be an efficient free throw shooter. I think he's eventually going to be a 3-point shooter. You know, he's not going to be a great real life defender, but I do think he will be a guy that gets you, you know, over a block a game, or at least, you know, over a block and a half per 36 minutes or something like that. So I'm interested to just see how much he plays as a rookie.
Well, he's in one of the best spots, I think, for any rookie or any player in general, just to find minutes, you know, like kind of be, you know, what we saw from Jayshon Tate last year, who was on no fantasy radars whatsoever. And just by virtue of being like the only healthy guy on a team that didn't really care, you know, really propelled him. They also have Garuba, who they grabbed at 23. Then they had another pick at 24 and took Josh Christopher, which I love both of those picks. I think Garuba has a chance to be a really, really good, really versatile, kind of unique defender for his age. And then Christopher, I mean, he reminds me of like Nick Young, you know, that type of player where it's just, you know, at his best, he's giving you like 24 points, 2 rebounds, 0 assists, 3 turnovers. Like, it's just scoring and that's about it. But, you know, if there's one place where he's going to go and be able to get some shots up as a rookie, it's Houston.
Yeah. And that they're going to play fast. And like down the stretch last year, any Rocket who was getting like 25 minutes or more a game had fantasy value, because
right. Any player in the NBA typically who's getting those minutes is going to have value.
But especially on that team where they just were like, they were like playing like a G League team, because they weren't defending at all. And they were playing at a really fast pace. So like guys like Kenyon Martin were having like fantasy value down the stretch last year. So, and that makes me all the more excited for what we could see from Jalen Green this year.
Kind of a sneaky fun league pass team if everybody's healthy, right? Like, you're rolling out John Wall, Kevin Porter, Jalen Green, maybe Jayshon Tate, maybe Daniel Tice at the four, and then Christian Wood at center with Sengun coming off the bench.
This is going to be my 21-22 version of the Hornets last year, where I like last year I watched like in the months of like January, February, I was watching as much Hornets as I was Bucks, just because LaMelo Ball was just can't miss TV. And I think the same might be true of the Rockets this year with Green and Porter.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So one of the questions I asked you in the Q&A was, how would you rate Golden State's haul of Kuminga and Moody with the 7th and the 14th picks? And, you know, I sent this out before free agency. So, you know, it was kind of geared at, you know, what do you think of Golden State, a team that's, you know, ostensibly trying to win the title in 2022, taking two guys who maybe aren't quite ready to contribute to that effort. Now that we know they've added Nemanja Bjelica, they've added Otto Porter, you know, it looks like they're pretty much going to bring back like the Jordan Pools and the Damian Lees of the world. You know, not that Otto Porter and Bjelica make you feel all that much better, but they have a little bit more depth now. Like, does it change how you view these picks given what they've done in free agency?
Not really. I mean, I think you had to expect that they were going to do something along these lines. Like they were definitely going to be willing to pay a big luxury tax bill, and they were definitely going to, like, I think the big misnomer to me was just this notion that, like, oh, you can't not take guys that are going to help you win now, because you have Curry and Clay and Draymond. Like, you owe it to them to draft guys who are going to help you win now. Like, they're just, it's stupid to think that you're going to get guys that are going to help you win now at those picks. I mean, even like, you know, they didn't get a crazy high pick, but, you know, I don't think Evan Mobley or maybe even like Jalen Green, I don't know if those guys are going to like help those teams win games. Like, they're going to put on a show and they're going to be really impressive, but like most rookies, like Anthony Edwards didn't help the Timberwolves win games last year. LaMelo Ball helped the Hornets win games, but that's like a very rare exception. Like Desmond Bane and Xavier Tillman helped Memphis win games, but that was just kind of a unique scenario. Like, you can't expect to get a guy like that. And I like Corey Kispert a lot, like for what he is. But even if they taken Corey Kispert over Moses Moody, you know, I mean, Kispert maybe plays like 18 minutes a game for them or something like that. So, I mean, I think getting Kuminga was just an absolute steal and a gift from OKC, because he looks so much the part, right? Like, I mean, he just keeps having those flashes like he had in his summer league debut last night, he's going to have a ton of trade value, because you just, guys like that don't come around very often. Guys who are like a legit 6'8" and strong and freak athletes, like that's the perfect mold of player that you want in today's NBA, the type of guy that can guard the very best players in the league and is a big time defensive mismatch for other teams. And he's so young that, like, he's so young and he's so gifted physically that even if his like shooting percentages aren't great this year, like I don't think it's going to kill his trade value, because you can still just dream on that upside. Yeah. And you know, there's still like maybe a I don't know, 15-20% chance that he's just ahead of schedule and is really showing really impressive flashes. And like, I would already rather have Kuminga than James Wiseman if I was another team that they were looking to try to get a superstar from. So I think you had to take a player with those picks, especially that number 7 pick, for the trade value aspect of it. If you care about helping Steph and Clay and Draymond, like, taking a guy that's going to have big time trade value is the best way to do that.
Right. And you could play it both ways. You know, if one of those guys hits, then, you know, you can either trade them or you have a really nice young player to develop. You know, I think that's the biggest point. You know, if you want to criticize the Warriors for not taking someone like Corey Kispert, who could conceivably step in, or even, you know, Davion Mitchell, who went 9 to Sacramento, it's that those guys aren't going to hold trade value if that's ultimately what it comes to. And I think Golden State, like, if Brad Beal gets on the market, I think they will, as great as Kuminga looked last night, and, you know, Moody even outscored him, like, those guys combined for 37 points in that summer league game. And Kuminga especially had a couple, like, wow type of plays, although he did have 6 turnovers. If Brad Beal's on the market, I don't think they hesitate to ship either of those guys out for Brad Beal. Like, they have the ability to either develop these two really promising young guys plus Wiseman, or, you know, flip them and, you know, become arguably the best team in the West overnight.
Yeah, like that rumored package that the Sixers asked for Ben Simmons, which was, like, completely laughable, where it was like Wiseman, the 7 pick, the 14 pick, and like 2 future firsts and Andrew Wiggins. That's not laughable if you're getting Bradley Beal necessarily. Like, that, you know, that's the type of package that probably gets that trade done. So, you know, Kuminga could have a very bright future. Wiseman, you know, we'll see. Moses Moody, you know, he could be a starter in the league for a long time. So I don't think the Warriors would think twice, no matter how good these guys look, about doing something like that for a guy like Beal.
Where did you come in on the Kings pick of Mitchell at 9? It felt like that one was somewhat of a head scratcher, kind of the Kings reverting back to being the Kings after getting a huge deal on Haliburton last year.
Yeah, I don't really know what to think of it, because they didn't have a ton of great options there, really. I mean, they could use some forward depth, probably more than they could use guard depth. So from that standpoint, it didn't make a ton of sense. But, like, I mean, who is the good forward you're going to take there? There really weren't a ton of great forward options on the board. I mean, were you going to take, like, Usman Garuba that high?
That would have been a very Kings pick. they thought they got criticized for taking Davion Mitchell, man. Yeah, no, that's, you know, true. Like, that's true. Those are all good points. And, you know, like, I think you just look, I don't think you should draft for need at number 9 or really anywhere in the NBA. No. The way that players are so versatile now and rosters can be manipulated. Like, I think a lot of people said, oh, you already have De'Aaron Fox, you already have Tyrese Haliburton, you currently have Buddy Hield, why would you take another guard? Like you said, it's not like Kuminga was sitting there. You know, if they take Zaire Williams, I think they get the same reaction. Luke Knight is another guard. You know, like, you know, it would have been maybe a reach to take Kispert there. I don't know that there was, like, a correct option for Sacramento. I think they probably wanted Wagner, who went 1 pick earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love – there's been talk of them doing, like, a 3-guard line. I assume eventually they're going to trade Buddy Hield. And eventually they could do a 3-guard lineup at times with Fox and Mitchell and Haliburton. I mean, I don't think you're going to have a credible defense, really, if you do that. So I don't love it. But, I mean, they may, you know, who knows how long De'Aaron Fox is going to be there. I mean, they might decide that, like, they're just not really going anywhere with him as their best player at some point and try to cash him out, or he might ask for a trade. So yeah, I think if Mitchell was the best player on their board, I think it's the right pick. He wasn't the best player on my board, but I mean, I didn't really think that one was crazy, just because, you know, in that range of the draft, once Kuminga's off the board, if you don't like Sengun and you're not that in on Zaire Williams, like you're not really getting a shot at getting a star there. So just take the best role player that's on your board.
What do you think of the fit for James Bouknight in Charlotte? I felt like this was a borderline steal just because there was a pretty decent chance, seemingly on draft night, that he would go as high as 6 to OKC. A lot of people thought 7 to Golden State. He was heavily favored gambling-wise to go with one of those two picks. He falls all the way to 11. The fit, I feel like, is okay. But for Charlotte, it was just a best asset available type of pick, I feel like. And now, you know, we said it on draft night. He made Devontae Graham expendable immediately. And, you know, lo and behold, a couple days later, they turn around and flip Devontae Graham to New Orleans and let the Pelicans be the team that gives him $50 million. I would rather have a backcourt of LaMelo and Rozier with James Bouknight, you know, kind of as my sixth man first guard off the bench than the Devontae Graham predicament where, you know, LaMelo kind of steals the starting spot, plays so well that you really can't start Devontae Graham. And then you have this guy who probably feels like he should be playing more than he should coming off the bench. And, you know, Devontae Graham is just such a huge negative defensively because of his size that, you know, Bouknight's never going to be a great defender either. But I think given the difference in cost, the difference in like willingness to accept the role, I think this is kind of a home run situation for the Hornets.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of what you said. Definitely agree with what you said about Devontae Graham. Like, I think that was one of the dumbest moves of free agency, what New Orleans did with him. But I do also think Bouknight's a bit overrated as a prospect. Like, he's not a freshman, and he's a shooting guard who shot under 30% from three last year. So, like, you know, why are we – like, I kind of buy the Jordan Clarkson comps, but people have to remember that – like it was like 4 or 5 years before Jordan Clarkson was even seen as like a good player. So like, you know, I think maybe he has that type of career, but I don't, you know, I'd rather have him on his contract than Graham on his contract. And I'd probably rather have him than Graham just anyways, just because we know exactly what Graham is. And like you said, he's a terrible defender who like, the only thing he can really do on offense is shoot threes. And so, I mean, at that point, he's just very replaceable and not that valuable. And Bouknight, if the three comes around, I know there was a lot of stuff about how he was shooting the three well in workouts. You know, that lots of guys have shot three-pointers well in workouts and not shot them well in games. So I'm not really willing to assume that that's going to be the case for him. But you know, I think the fit is great. I don't think he's as good as some people think he is.
All right, so 12 through 20 in this draft went Primo, Duarte, Moody, Kispert, Sengun, Trey Murphy, Trey Mann, Kai Jones, and Jalen Johnson. Pick one or two guys from that group to talk about.
Well, we already kind of touched on Sengun, and I like Kispert to the Wizards. I like the Moody pick a decent amount. I think he's got a chance to be someone that can help them by the end of the year, at least look like a nice trade asset. Chris Duarte to the Pacers. Like, that was the most predictable pick probably outside of the top three. Like, just getting Rick Carlisle, the oldest player in the draft. Like, that's just kind of classic. There's been so much backlash to the Josh Primo pick that I kind of think he's going to be good.
Wait, are you going to zag on Primo?
Like, you know, when we're doing like for like when I am analyzing baseball prospects for the MLB draft, like being the youngest guy, from the high school ranks, or one of the youngest guys, is always like a huge deal. Like, there's just, you're typically going to have a much better chance of panning out if you're a really young 18-year-old than if you're like 19 already. And I think that can apply to the NBA draft as well. Like, I think, you know, obviously he wasn't good at Alabama last year, like in the traditional sense of, like, he wasn't wowing college analysts last year. But we have to kind of put some context behind this and look at his age and look at his measurables and the fact that he could develop into a pretty good 3-point shooter, which, you know, if you can do that at 6'6" and you can develop some on-ball skills, maybe as just kind of a secondary or even tertiary creator, like, I think that there's a chance he could turn into something. And you know, the whole notion that, oh, you can't take him at 12, you should have traded down and taken him at like 18 or whatever. First of all, it didn't seem like there was much of a market to trade down in this draft. And I just don't think you can ever say that, like, oh, he would have been there at 17 because none of these mock drafts had him going in the top 20. Like, that's not how this works at all. Like, mock drafts are mock drafts. They're done by people who write on the internet. They're not done by front office people. So I think there's been too much heat on the Spurs for that primo pick. And I like the fact that they didn't take a guy like Chris Duarte or like Corey Kispert just because those guys could play now. Like, I like that the Spurs are kind of sort of accepting the fact that they're not going to be a realistic playoff team this year. And if they are, then great. That means a lot of their young guys took big steps forward. But I like the fact that they actually went with like a young player that they really like rather than just some old guy they thought could step in right away.
All right, we got to switch gears to free agency. Just touched on a few of the major moves. And we have to start with my hometown, Los Angeles Lakers. What is going on? I love what they've done outside of the Russell Westbrook addition. I feel like they've made a ton of really good moves to offset the damage that they've done by bringing in Westbrook. But at the end of the day, I don't feel any differently about their chances to win the title than I did before they had Russell Westbrook, if that makes sense. Like, the at the time they traded for Westbrook, I thought huge minus. They took a step back. But by bringing in Ellington, by bringing back THT, by getting Malik Monk, Kendrick Nunn, that's probably the biggest one. You know, even Ariza, Bazemore, Dwight, like, none of those guys move the needle individually, but collectively, I think they nailed all of their low-cost additions. I just feel like Westbrook has a chance to be such an enormous negative in the playoffs that it might not matter. With that said, you know, the Clippers are going to be without Kawhi for most, if not all, the year. I think the Suns probably take a slight step back. It felt like everything went their way last year. Denver's without Jamal Murray. Dallas didn't really get all that much better around Luka. You know, the Warriors are going to be there, but I have a hard time really feeling better about any other team representing the West in the finals, assuming everyone stays healthy, than I do about the Lakers, even though I don't really love what they've done.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with all of that. You know, I think Frank Vogel's really going to have his hands full. Like, this is going to be really tough for him to maneuver because, well, first of all, like, we've never seen a team like even go to the finals, let alone win the finals, with this much turnover on a roster from one year to the next. Like, it's just, I mean, I don't even know if we've seen a team have this much turnover on a roster.
Well, I think the only other times that would compare are like when LeBron came to the Heat, they clean house, and it was just those three on the roster for a little bit. And then it was like, you know, Mario Chalmers, Birdman, fill it in with those guys. Like, the only other times there's been anything close are other LeBron instances, either in Miami or Cleveland.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, how many of these guys are going to be okay playing like 18 minutes a game? Because some of them are going to have to play. So, like, are they going to run an 11-man rotation where everyone plays like 24 minutes? Like, no, it's going to, like, some sort of hierarchy is going to be established. And I think it should be probably fine. At least during the regular season, because LeBron's there and he will keep these guys in line. And I mean, you know, guys like Trevor Ariza, like Wayne Ellington, like I don't think they're going to make waves based on how much they're playing. But, you know, is Carmelo Anthony going to be okay?
That's the name I was thinking. Yeah. I mean, that's where I could see this becoming a Dwayne Wade in Cleveland situation.
Yeah.
And Melo is like quietly released and signs with the Knicks midway through the year.
I mean, they're not going to be able to guard any guards. You know, like when they play like Donovan Mitchell or Damian Lillard or Steph Curry, like those guys should be extremely high priced on DraftKings and FanDuel those nights. Because like, it's just like, if you're a talented guard and you go up against this team, you should be able to drop 40. I think, you know, any minutes where Russell Westbrook is out there with Marc Gasol or Dwight Howard, you're going to have a pretty terrible half court offense. I think maybe LeBron is maybe underestimating how smart NBA defenses have gotten with regards to a guy like Russell Westbrook in the playoffs, where like this team's going to look really amazing during some regular season games where the other defense is just kind of like, you know, it's their third game in five nights and they're on the road and they didn't really put much of a game plan together. And there's going to be all kinds of like LeBron to Russ alley-oops and just crazy stuff. And it's going to look great. But once you get into the playoffs, there's really no reason to not pack the paint on this team. Like, you just, if you eliminate the half court cuts that could lead to like layups or dunks, I don't really know how this team scores efficiently in the half court. And if you've scouted them well, then you should be able to take away a lot of their pet stuff to generate fast breaks, where like LeBron will get a rebound and turn and fire it to Westbrook, who's leaking out. Like, you should be able to take that stuff away in the playoffs. And I mean, you're basically going to have to ask LeBron James to guard the very, very best wing scorers in the league during the playoffs, unless you think like Talen Horton Tucker's up to that challenge. I mean, I know Trevor Ariza could once do that. I don't think he's capable of doing that anymore, at least at the highest level. You're going to need to play Anthony Davis 30 minutes a game at center, at least during the playoffs. So it's just, there's a lot that goes into this, to get it to work. And I would take the field over the Lakers to go to the finals, but I would say the Lakers are the favorites to come out of the West. I just think odds are, whether it's Jamal Murray coming back sooner than we think, or, you know, if Klay Thompson returns to like 90% of his pre-injury self, I mean, I think the Warriors have a really good shot. They're gonna have a much better like identity in terms of their offensive game plan and their offensive X's and O's than the Lakers are. There's gonna be a lot of LeBron taking, you know, fadeaway threes with, you know, the game winding down and that type of stuff, just because Westbrook's gonna be off the ball, his defender's not gonna guard him. If you've got a center in the game, his defender's not going to be guarding him, really. There's all kinds of ways that this could go sideways. But I do think, like, everything they've done after the Westbrook trade has been about as good as you could have hoped. But I still think those big weaknesses are still going to be there.
The one piece they have remaining is, you know, Dennis Schroeder potentially coming back to this team and taking like the taxpayer mid-level because he just can't get anything else. Like, that is potentially on the table. You know, working some sort of sign and trade to bring in another defender or another shooter, because, you know, I feel better about the shooting right now, but it's also because of Wayne Ellington, who is not exactly Klay Thompson. You know, like they're still really thin. And if Wayne Ellington misses a month with an ankle injury, all of a sudden they're back to having like Malik Monk as the best shooter on this team. Like as currently constructed, what's the closing lineup for the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals right now? I mean, you have AD, you have LeBron. Westbrook has to be out there. I mean, who are the other two guys? Like, is it Ellington? Is it Horton Tucker? Is Kendrick Nunn closing a Western Conference Finals game?
Man, if I had to guess, I would say it would be Kendrick Nunn and Trevor Ariza. But man, it's kind of pick your poison. Like, do you want to prioritize 3-point shooting and just have a really skeleton crew defensively? I mean, if you prioritize shooting, your offense could be really good with those AD at center lineups where Russ is the only like total non-shooter. But I mean, Anthony Davis, like if you exclude what he did in the bubble, like he's not that great of a 3-point shooter.
Under 30% last season.
Yeah. So like if you have AD at center and you put Ellington in there and you put, you know, whoever your next best 3-point shooter is in there, like, you know, whatever, like say it's Ariza. I think they'll be fine offensively, but then you have two guards that you can absolutely attack. The other team could just go right at and just really kind of embarrass on the other end. But then if you go defense, I mean, I don't even know who really qualifies as a strong defender. Ariza has that reputation. Bazemore kind of has that reputation. But like, I don't think those guys aren't, like, if you go back to like that, like Bucks series, like against the Suns or against the Nets, like Ariza and Bazemore aren't stacking up as like big time defenders in like a high leverage playoff game.
No.
So if you go with those defensive guys, then I just don't think you have enough offense. So I think Vogel's going to be kind of mixing and matching, playing the hot hand. Like you could see like Wayne Ellington, like pulling a Joe Harris or pulling a Harrison Barnes and just not doing the one thing he's supposed to do and just getting kind of removed from the rotation. Like, I mean, that could happen. Maybe Malik Monk is feeling it and he's in there with Russ, and then your defense is really a disaster. I don't know. It's going to be challenging. If Carmelo gets those sort of legacy minutes, then you have another place to attack defensively.
He's getting those minutes, unfortunately.
Yeah, the best thing that could happen for this team is that Talen Horton-Tucker takes a leap this year and becomes a guy that you can rely on in those minutes. But I mean, he hasn't done that yet.
No, he was a massive disappointment, I thought, last year, and did not take the steps forward that the Lakers hoped he would and that it looked like he would after that preseason. One final positive thing I will say about the Lakers, I am glad they did not retain Alex Caruso. I think, you know, his popularity as a player has far exceeded how good he's actually been. And I know the defensive metrics are good. He is a good defender. He's a scrappy defender. He also just made a lot of kind of dumb plays, I thought, defensively, like fouls a lot of shooters, you know, jumps at closeouts, things like that. And offensively, I thought he took a huge step back this last season. He had some big moments. He had some big moments in the bubble, but I don't think he really gave them anything this past year. I thought he was one of their bigger issues on offense. Couldn't finish, you know, really could not shoot. I swear to God, he missed like every wide open 3-pointer possible on kickouts. I thought, you know, having him around on essentially a minimum second round deal was great, but I would not want to be the team that's paying Alex Caruso $40 million. And I said to Alex on the pod the other day, this just reminds me of when the Bucks signed Matthew Dellavedova coming off of that hot NBA Finals run.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little harsh. I don't think he's that bad. But I mean, they clearly prioritized offense over defense with these signings. And like, I'm picturing LeBron like thinking of this being kind of like similar to his Miami title teams, where like Russ is the Westbrook and AD's like Russ is a lesser version of Dwayne Wade, and AD is a better version than Chris Bosh, and it'll work out that way. But I just think like LeBron is not that caliber defender anymore. Russ defensively compared to like Dwayne Wade defensively, it's just like you couldn't have a bigger gap. And then defenses have just gotten so much more advanced in terms of like picking on your weaknesses that I just don't think it's going to play out that way. So, I mean, I think defensively, and they might have looked at like what Brooklyn did and say like, hey, we don't have worse defensive personnel than the Nets did last year, and they would have won the title if they'd stay healthy. But, you know, you think about the shooting that those three had, like Harden, Kyrie, and KD, versus the shooting that this Lakers big three has. All three of those Nets guys are significantly better three-point shooters than the best three-point shooter of LeBron, Wett, Russ, and Davis. So, I mean, it's if they win the title, like Frank Vogel is all of a sudden like among the best coaches in the league, if he's not already there, and LeBron has like the ultimate I told you so, the ultimate trump card if they can win the title with this group.
And he's already started that parade. Yeah, everybody's been hating on the Lakers. I'm sure you saw his tweet yesterday that he's not happy about what people are saying about the moves that they made. The other team I want to talk about, and then we'll get out of here, but you know, if you want more free agency talk, Alex and I covered virtually every signing earlier this week, and you can find that in this same feed. The Chicago Bulls now can roll out a starting five of Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, either Patrick Williams or Lauri Markkanen, and Nikola Vucevic at the five, which I think on paper sounds pretty good. You have either Markkanen or Williams, and you have Kobe White. You have Alex Caruso, those three coming off the bench. That's a pretty solid top seven, top eight. I actually thought losing Thad Young to the Spurs in the DeRozan sign-in trade was kind of a big deal for this team depth-wise, which is maybe not a good thing. But where do you come in on the Bulls? Like, did this really change anything for how you view their ceiling?
I mean, I think they are a pretty decent bet to make the playoffs now. I can't wait to recommend people bang the under on whatever their Vegas over under is. Like, if it comes in anywhere higher than like 45 or 46, then I would strongly recommend putting a hefty wager on the under. I mean, this really could be, it'll definitely be a bottom 10 defense. It could be a bottom 5 defense. Having Lonzo Ball and like Patrick Williams is fine. He's a promising young player, but having Lonzo Ball and Patrick Williams and Alex Caruso, like those are your defensive stalwarts on this team. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's just, there's a big time cap on your upside if that's the quality of your defense. And like, I think Arturis Karnišević, like, is thinking like he's trying to build the Denver Nuggets 2.0, where it's a lot of focus on offense, and you're not as worried as much about the defense. But no one on this team, like Zach LaVine, I'm sorry, like no one on this team has anywhere near the ceiling of Nikola Jokic offensively. And that's what makes the Denver Nuggets work, is that he's just such a phenomenal talent, one of the best offensive players we've really ever seen. And that's what allows that to work in Denver. They don't have that type of guy. Like, Zach LaVine's great, but he doesn't make his teammates better offensively. And I think the Lonzo Ball move was amazing. Like, I think that was one of the best moves of this entire agency. And then they just erased it and then some with the DeMar DeRozan contract, because you're overpaying him. You attached picks to overpay him. He is not a good fit because of the defensive stuff I mentioned. And like, I don't think it's a lock at all that Zach LaVine re-signs. And then you're stuck with this DeRozan, Vucevic, Lonzo Ball, like, core that is just going to be too good to get you high in the lottery and too bad to get you more than like the 7 or 8 seed. So if the goal was just like, we have to make the playoffs and we have to make the playoffs for the next 2 or 3 years, if possible, it doesn't really matter what seed we are. We have to make the playoffs. If that was the goal, then I think they did fine. But if the goal was to win a playoff series or get home court advantage in the first round, I just think that this was kind of a disaster, mainly just because of DeRozan. I mean, the Vucevic trade was terrible, and the DeRozan signing was just as bad, if not worse.
What do you think the Bulls' title odds have moved to now this morning after all these moves? I'll tell you, they started at 100-1.
I mean, I don't think they should be higher than like 60-1. What are they?
60-1. That's the number I last saw at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Okay. So surprisingly realistic, right? Like, I would not have been shocked if they were listed at like 35-1, just trying to capitalize on people, you know, being irrationally exuberant about these moves. But 60-1's right. I mean, they're a better team. If things break right, they could win 50 games and get like the 3 seed in the East, but I don't think anybody's going to take this team seriously.
I don't think they can get the 3 seed. Like, I think in the best case scenario, even with like injuries to other teams, I don't think they can get that high. Cuz like the defensively, like the only teams that have gotten that high of a seed with this bad of a defense have been teams like the Nets and like the Nuggets. And like I said, like it's a good offense. It's probably a top 10 offense, but it's not a top 5 offense. And they would need to be like a clear top 5 offense to have a chance of getting that high.
Right. And I think one thing that's being overlooked, and maybe some people are willfully overlooking it because of the circumstances surrounding the 2020-21 season, but they were bad with Vucevic and LaVine. Like, I think people expected that team or that tandem to pair up and the Bulls to just like take off like a rocket ship after the trade deadline. And it went the other way. Like, you know, eventually I think LaVine got COVID and was out for a couple weeks, and that was basically curtains on the season. But before that, it was a complete disaster. Like, it was kind of a take turns offense. You know, their defense fell off a cliff. It wasn't that great beforehand. You know, it's not like these guys went 15-5 together in the lineup at the end of last year. Like, you know, you're adding two more pieces in Lonzo and DeRozan, and Lonzo should be pretty transferable. I'm not worried about him at all. I think you're right. That was a great move. I think that one's been pretty much universally praised. But bringing in DeRozan at that price, man, it helps keep your floor high. But I just don't know. I don't know what the direction is. And now they're out, what, at two more future first round picks? I think one more from the Vooch deal, and then now one more that you send out to get DeRozan?
Yeah, like that. There's just, I don't see this team ever getting a top 4 seed in the next 5 years. And I don't see them ever getting a top 5 pick in the next 5 years. So they're just kind of stuck in this, you know, no man's land. And I don't know, maybe that was okay. Maybe that's fine with what they were trying to accomplish. But I mean, I think like all those four guys, like Lonzo, LaVine, DeRozan, Vucevic, I think they'll be great in fantasy because their identity is clear now. This is an offensive team. They're going to try to have the best offense they possibly can. And, you know, they're going to be asking a lot of Alex Caruso. I mean, the other thing is like Frank Vogel's a really good defensive coach, and he used Caruso very well. Caruso got to play with other great defenders like KCP and AD, and like LeBron had a really good defensive year last year. Billy Donovan is not a defensive whiz. So like this team's going to have to win with offense. So I like those four guys for fantasy because they're just going to have to score. They're going to have to try to outscore everyone.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And even though, you know, there's still some upside with the Coby Whites of the world, you know, it's not a super, super robust bench by any means. And if any of those guys are either shipped out or are injured, you know, it's going to be even more heavily dependent on that top four, top five. But I don't want to start digging into any of these other moves. We're going to get sidetracked and this is going to go for 2.5 hours. But James, as always, appreciate you stepping away from baseball for a little bit to talk some NBA. And I'm sure we'll do it again soon.
Thanks for having me.